This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. And apparently, I cannot get the keys stuck in the ignition of the car today. Actually, I'm not driving home. Getting the key in the car flustered me. I'm driving from Walmart to the church because we either have A, Christmas party for the worship staff, or B, a rehearsal for Sunday. According to my calendar and according to the services app that I have on my phone, it's a rehearsal. According to my wife, it's the Christmas party for the worship team. So we'll just see which it is. Either way, I'm heading to the church. So this is going to be fairly quick. All is well. Haven't got nearly enough read on the book in the final read-through this week because we've had other things to do, including the Christmas party for the church staff. So there's been some time spent there. But I think I'm doing okay. I should be able to get it finished read this weekend, and then I should be able to get all the files built this weekend so that I'm ready to go, which is good because I'm going to need next week to finish up on the elf costume because I've been busy with other stuff, and so normally I have these little costumes finished easily 2 weeks ahead of time. I've tried them on, make sure everything's ready to go just to give myself a little, and I am behind. I am way behind. So, but we'll get caught up next week because it's not until next Friday, so it'll be fine. And I actually have more to make for tomorrow as well. I decided I would do an ugly Christmas sweater day just using a t-shirt that looks like an ugly Christmas sweater because I thought that was fun and be cute, et cetera, et cetera. As it turns out, now that I have discussed this idea of an ugly Christmas sweater day with a couple of people, as it turns out, this ugly Christmas thing is huge. I mean, it is huge. Now I'm noticing Walmart sells all these ugly Christmas sweaters. I think I'm going to be seriously outclassed tomorrow. So, all that means is that next year, you're going to have to go all out next year. I think I've decided I'm going to do a Christmas Story ugly sweater day. So it'll all, the ugly sweater outfit will all be kind of based around a Christmas story. So the movie A Christmas Story. So we'll see how that goes. Anyways, all is well at work. We're still powering along. All is well. All is well at home. All is well. Okay. This week, as you know, if you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time at all, I'm always interested and amused slash whatever else when I find something in the secular press that makes me go, well, yeah, that's the flesh. So, so I came across this article called The Bad News on Human Nature, 10 Findings from Psychology. This was from Christian Garrett, is the author's name. It was published on December 5th, 2018. Pretty interesting article. And literally talks about the bad news when it comes to human nature. And there's 10 different findings he's discussed. And I'm starting to lose my light because it gets dark so fast now. It's only 5 o'clock and it's already getting dark. But I'll be to the church soon and I'll just sit in the car and turn on my light and I'll be good. So just see if this doesn't sound like the flesh. If this doesn't sound like something that's out for destruction. He said, for one thing, we view minorities and the vulnerable as less human. So he said, one striking example of this blatant dehumanization came from a brain scan study that found that a small group of students exhibited less neural activity in an area associated with thinking about people when they looked at pictures of the homeless or drug addicts. as compared with higher status individuals. Another study showed that those people who are opposed to Arab immigration tended to rate Arabs and Muslims as literally less evolved than average. Among other examples, there's also evidence that young people dehumanize older people, that men and women alike dehumanize drunk women. What's more, the inclination to dehumanize starts early. This was fascinating. Starts early. People as young as 5 view out-group faces. By that we mean faces of people from a different city or a different gender to the child, as less human than in-group faces. And I would add to this that we tend to dehumanize those who disagree with us. You know, it's amazing when you get people talking about political stuff, they will start talking about whoever the other side is. Liberals talking about the conservatives, conservatives talking about liberals. And it's people will act like the people on the other side of the discussion are just, they're the most stupidest thing, and I don't know what's wrong with them, and blah, 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 blah. It's like, whoa, hold up. This is just a different disagreement. The second study he was talking about was Schadenfreude. I think that's the way you say that, Schadenfreude, which is the pleasure at another person's distress. And according to one study, they think now we experience that by the age of 4. So we take delight in other people's distress, possibly as early as the age of 4, according to a study from 2013. They said a more recent study found that by age 6, children will pay. They will pay to watch an antisocial puppet being hit rather than spending the money on stickers. Wow. Okay. So by 6 years old, people like to see antisocial puppets being punished. Also, we believe in karma, assuming that the downtrodden of the world deserve their fate. The unfortunate consequences of such beliefs were demonstrated in the now classic research from 1966. In their experiment, psychologists Melvin Lerner and Carolyn Simmons, in their experiments in which a female learner was punished with electric shocks for wrong answers, women participants subsequently rated her as less likely likable and admirable when they heard that they would be seeing her suffering again, and especially if they felt powerless to minimize this suffering. So, women were confronted with another woman suffering, and if they heard they would be seeing her suffer again, they rated her less likable and admirable. So they are justifying the fact that she is suffering. Since then, research has shown our willingness to blame the poor, rape victim, AIDS patients, and others for their fate so as to preserve our belief in a just world. Another thing he claims is that we are blinkered and dogmatic. If people were rational and open-minded, then the straightforward way to correct someone's false beliefs would be to present them with some relevant facts. However, a classic study from 1979 showed the futility of this approach. Participants who strongly believed for or against the death penalty completely ignored facts that undermined their position, actually doubling down on their initial view. Of course, we've never heard of this happening before. You know, someone in a political party believes a certain way, and you try to present them, well, what about such and such? And it's like, no, that can't be, you know, et cetera, et cetera. This one. I just laughed out loud when I read this one. Quote, we would rather electrocute ourselves than spend time in our own thoughts. This was documented in a controversial 2014 study in which 67% of the male participants and 25% of the female participants opted to give themselves unpleasant electric shocks rather than spend 15 minutes in peaceful contemplation. Also, we are vain and overconfident. They called this the Lake Wobegon effect, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average. Because if you ask people how well they drive, the majority of them will say that they're above-average drivers. Think about that for a minute. He says, ironically, the least skilled among us are the most prone to overconfidence. This vain self-enhancement seems to be most extreme and irrational in the case of our morality, such as just how principled and fair we think we are. In fact, even jailed criminals think they are kinder and more trustworthy and honest than the average member of the public. Another study, we are moral hypocrites. And I have noticed this also. It pays to be wary of those who are quickest and loudest in condemning the moral failings of others. The chances are that the moral preachers are just as guilty themselves, but take a far lighter view of their own transgressions. You know, it's really amazing when you hear someone just calling other people's out for their moral failings, telling those people what they're supposed to do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's really amazing if you just wait a couple of years what comes out. Let's see, another one. We are all potential trolls. As anyone who found themselves in a spat on Twitter can attest, social media might be magnifying some of the worst aspects of human nature. In due part to the disinhibition effect of being online and the fact that anonymity is known to increase our inclinations for immorality.
I wonder why that is.
It says, while research has suggested that people who are prone to everyday sadism, a worryingly high proportion of us, are especially inclined to online trolling, a study published last year revealed Wow, I'm having trouble reading today. A study published last year revealed how being in a bad mood, being exposed to trolling by others, doubles the likelihood of a person engaging in trolling themselves. And you can take bad mood / tired / not feeling well / anything that puts you under an emotional load of some sort. That's when you really got to be careful, because the flesh just pounds through. Also, we favor ineffective leaders with psychopathic traits. Of course, they're pointing to Trump there. Let's see. And this fits into a wider pattern. The finding among psychopathic traits are more common than average among leaders. Take the survey of the financial leaders in New York that found that they scored higher on psychopathic traits but lower on average in emotional intelligence. Okay, another one. We are sexually attracted to people with dark personality traits, at least in the short term. We are more attracted to people displaying narcissism, psychopathy, and Machiavellianism. It's interesting because I had a friend I was chatting with once, and they were really having trouble with a breakup that they had had. They parted as friends, but then they were in the process of another relationship, and all of a sudden their thoughts just kept going back to this the person before, and they were thinking, oh, have I made a mistake? Have I made a mistake? But it's amazing. I talked to that person a couple of days later, and the person said, you know, I started thinking, why would my flesh, this is why it's really good to recognize what's going on, why would my flesh want to be harassing me with this first person when I'm dating this second person? And they said they realized that there were certain elements of the relationship with the first person that were potentially more dangerous. There were certain aspects of it that it would have been easier to get in trouble with. And they said it was fascinating that the moment they realized that, that it was something like went click inside them. And suddenly, that distraction that they were having whipped away. It was gone. I mean, those types of experiences, when they happen like that, when you're quote-unquote feeling something and it's so hard to get away from it, and then you start thinking, why is the flesh digging in its heels here? Why is it working so hard to lie to me about this? If you can get down to that lie that it's telling you that's stirring up that emotional distress, it's amazing that when you touch that lie and you expose it, that a lot of times all that emotional distress will evaporate. It won't just settle down. It will evaporate instantly. And when you feel that happen, that's the point where you start going, wait a minute. And you realize that those things that you thought were your feelings, those things that you thought were things that were bothering you, were in fact just being pushed and pushed and pushed on you by the flesh. And the moment the flesh that it thinks that it cannot get any traction on that any longer, it will quit and go after another angle. So it's pretty interesting. Now, and that, when I had one of those experiences, that was one of the things that, although I believed in the flesh and the spirit for a long time, when I had that experience and I felt that instantaneous change in my emotional mindset, that was one of the things that really, really convinced me that, in fact, we, each of us, are dealing with this autonomous entity within us. It is us, but each of us have a kind of schizophrenia that there is this destroyer that is looking to cause as much havoc in our lives as it can. The good news is we have free will. We don't have to listen to that. And by listen to that, I mean fairly literally, because the only mechanism that the flesh ever has against us is lies. It will tell us lies. It will whisper lies to us. And we'll be sitting there thinking, oh, I'm really worried about this. I'm really worried about that. No, you're not really worried about that. What's really happening is the flesh is lying to you. So I'll give you a quick example. We're coming up on December month end. It will happen after Christmas vacation, probably around somewhere January 8th, January 9th, possibly the 10th, somewhere in there. It's not. It's year end. It's a big deal. It's also a big deal because I have been campaigning for years that when people call up to the client and say, oh, I don't need a tax receipt, you know, or can you just send me one tax receipt, that they should be told, well, set up an account, come to this website, giving.ag.org, and you can just download your receipt anytime you want to. Instead of getting them to go through that process and then completely turning off the receipts, what has happened is they have all been put on an annuals receipt. And last year, when we closed 2017, my buddy and I were actually in there late at night trying to figure out why things had gotten hung. And in fact, they hadn't gotten hung. It was just processing through 7,000 donors and processing through 7,000 annual receipts. So I checked this week, and in fact, we're up to 11,000 annual receipts now. It's like 11,700. It's like, ah, come on. So they still aren't doing what I had suggested. They're still putting people on annual receipts. And so, of course, the flesh is, oh, it's going to blow up, it's going to blow up, it's going to blow up. Maybe it'll blow up, maybe it won't. The fact is, we do receipts for 39,000 donors every time we do recurring. So, you know, there's no guarantee that it's going to blow up. And it did fine last year, and it will probably do fine this year. So I can listen to that lie, or I can just say, you know what? No one knows. No one knows one way or another what's going to happen on January the 8th or the 9th or the 10th, whenever it is. Nobody, nobody knows. So I can believe that it's going to go through and everything's going to be great just as easily as I can believe that it's going to blow up. Not one of those is any truer than the other because it's in the future and there's no way to tell for sure. So I can listen to the flesh trying to get me stirred up about that, or I can just go, you know what? I guess we'll just wait and see. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.